College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
All right, week five is here, and we're getting to the point of the season where you look up and you say, all right, to me, this is the week where they should release the first top 25 poll. And if we did that, and we could base it on what we saw on the field for the first 4 weeks, you could make the case that LSU should be the number one team. You could make the case that maybe Auburn should be the number one team. You could make the case that maybe Georgia should be the number one team, or Ohio State should be the number one team. Let's bring in David Pollock. Great to have you join us here as you join us from Lincoln, Nebraska, as game day and their first experience with the Nebraska Cornhuskers in quite some time. They host Ohio State. Pollock, what do you think of my argument in my case where you wait for the polls, and right now you can make a case for a handful of other teams outside of Clemson to be number one in the country? Who would you have number one right now?
Well, first of all, I think it's really cool that before the season started, everybody and their brother said, it's Clemson, it's Alabama, and it's everybody else. I don't feel that way. I think there's three, four, five teams that could beat Clemson and Alabama. So, to me, I like that there's going to be more excitement. I think there's a good list of teams now that you have that are going to be fighting for four spots. But the parity aspect of which we said was gone now appears to be very much alive and appears to be more programs in it than just Clemson and Alabama. If you're telling me Clemson, Alabama, or the field, I'll take the field, which is something in the past that I probably wouldn't have said.
Yeah, you got tiers here, right? It feels like we have a tier one, and it could feature potentially five to six teams, and then there's a big drop-off, right? It's everybody else. But you didn't answer my question. Who would you have number one right now in the country?
You could flip a coin. Honest to God, I really wouldn't care which way you said it. I'll say this. I think if I'm going team by team, Clemson hasn't showed me that they haven't showed me the Trevor Lawrence experience is growing. You know, I think he'll get there probably by the end of the year, but it's been kind of it's a little bit more up and down, more mistakes than I figured he would have, more mistakes than he made as a true freshman a year ago. I look at Alabama, I think their defense is as vulnerable as it's been in years, and, you know, not just the injuries, but there's not a lot of depth on Alabama, and I think that there's plays to be had on that defense, and teams are going to score on them. I look at LSU and the way they're throwing the ball over the yard, and the way the Joe Brady experience is going, and they're looking unbelievable. Oklahoma looking unbelievable offensively. Both of those teams, though, I'll say this, I don't know about LSU's defense. I know they got carved up by Texas. I don't know if Oklahoma's completely rebuilt yet, and I'm going to buy stock in them. Georgia, I feel like I know a lot about, and I know they're very consistent on all sides. They're very, very young at a lot of positions that are going to be impact positions throughout the season that I think will continue to grow and to get better. But honest to God, I mean, I think all those teams are on the same playing field. I mean, for what they've done and the most impressive win, give it to LSU. I mean, if I'm going to give it the best win so far is going to Texas, who we know is going to be a top 15, top 10 team, no doubt about it, in pulling out that game. That, to me, is the most impressive win on the season or on the schedule, so I would give it to them right now.
Yeah, you gave me like a two-minute answer to say LSU. I let me tell you, I was about to call you out with the waffling stuff, man. I was going to call you a waffler because if I went the same way you just went,
syrup with that waffle.
You would have called me out and been like, come on, man, a coin toss, come on.
Yeah, I would have called you out.
Yes,
there's
you would
no doubt, but,
yeah.
But again, there isn't. I don't think there's a right answer. I think there's a case to be made for multiple
teams. With you, and that's how I started. I said you could make a case for Auburn, you could make a case for Georgia, Ohio State, but I felt like LSU.
I couldn't make a case for Auburn.
Yeah, you can make a case for Auburn. The reason why I say that is considering who they have played and how they have played those games. They beat a team like Oregon, and they beat Texas A&M at Kyle Field. I'm just saying, based on the first 4 weeks, right? You can make a case for Auburn on who they played, right?
So I got you, but there also has to be a component of I'm watching these teams and I'm seeing it, and what I'm seeing, I give them kudos and credit.
Gotcha.
Now, how much do we really buy into A&M right now, by the way?
You're right.
The regression of Kellen Mond, the regression of that offense is real. The defense is pretty good, but not great. So I don't look at A&M like a I don't look at A&M as a top 15 team. I look at them as going to be a team that's going to have five losses on the season probably. And again, with that schedule, a lot of teams in the country would. Bo Nix is winning ball games, but you know what, he threw for 100 yards again. I mean,
yeah,
it's not like he's had to do anything. Listen, he did it in the Oregon game, and it was nice, but I'm going to have to see more from him before I can say he's going to go toe-to-toe with Joe Burrow and win. He's going to go toe-to-toe with Tua and win. He's going to go toe-to-toe with Jake Fromm and win. That I can separate by watching tape and having an opinion.
I'm with you on that. And then I just say, well, I have the Auburn defensive front, right? Because I think the Auburn defensive front is they've been the star so far when you talk about the Tigers early in the season. All right, LSU has the bye, so we won't talk about them the rest of this podcast. But I want to talk about the games, and we've got a couple of interesting games today, Friday. Penn State coming off a bye. Maryland coming off a bye. Maryland, you know, back to reality after, you know, a top 25 and the idea of this offense and then coming off that loss against Temple. When you look at that matchup, what do you want to see from Penn State as we try to figure this team out and they go on the road in a game that Maryland has circled for a long time when you talk about recruiting battles?
Yeah, I think when you look at this matchup and I'm Penn State, I'm not worried. I wouldn't be worried about my defense. I think my defense is solid. Now listen, you're going against a high flying offense that can really put points up and really compromise you in multiple ways. But I think Penn State's offense is the question mark. And Clifford, you know, pulling the strings, he's been okay. I mean, if you go look at his numbers, I'm sure you're going to say, oh, he's thrown for, you know, 781 yards and a bunch of touchdowns and all that good stuff. But I haven't bought into it yet where I'm saying the Penn State offense is really, really good yet. Now, here's the thing. I don't think the Maryland defense is spectacular by any stretch. And there's definitely plays to be made. I think when I'm looking at this matchup and I'm making a decision on who's going to win, I think Penn State can make it harder on Maryland's offense. I think Penn State has a lot of athleticism in the front seven. They can make things exceptionally difficult. Friday night game, I think Penn State is the favorite for me because of that defense.
So you got Penn State winning.
Yes, sir. What you got?
I got Penn State winning. So listen, a week ago we were aligned with all of our games. We only lost once. And you were
yeah,
cursing me at the end of the podcast
though,
that you didn't want to be on the same page with me, but we fared pretty well. All right, so right now we're on the same page with Penn State at Maryland. We'll be back in a minute to preview Arizona State versus Cal with Pollock. But first, a word from Allstate, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show. I think we're going to have some separation here. The other night game on Friday, Arizona State at Cal.
Who you got? Let's go.
I'm going with Arizona State. I like Jaden Daniels a lot. I like the Fighting Herm Edwards. I think they play with a certain toughness. Now, I say that going up against a Cal team that's going to be at home, and their defense is fantastic. But I like Herm to win a crazy game on a field goal late. You're going to try and change your pick, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm thinking about going Cal just because of that. I'm literally thinking about it because that drives me nuts. Because thought you'd go with the favorite, but I like Arizona State too. I think that Arizona State's offense can get a few more things. Benjamin hasn't got going yet, and like he should. And he's a guy that we know can be really dangerous with the football in his hands, but. I think at receiver too, you got Ike, I think is how you say his name. That dude is, he's legit. He can make big plays. I just think, here's the thing I think with Jaden Daniels that Garbers can't do. Daniels, I feel like, can bust one or two or three big plays with his feet. He's got that ability to do so. when you have that ability, now you score points. Well, points are in bunches. And like we talked about, Cal hasn't scored over 28 points this season. They haven't done that. I feel like Jaden can make a few plays with his feet. Now, listen, we saw Arizona State against Michigan State, and they struggled like crazy. But they found a way to make one more play, and I think they'll do the same in this game. And unfortunately, I agree with you.
All right. It's early with our picks, but right now we're lockstep here. All right. Now, an interesting matchup because Notre Dame coming off that emotional high against Georgia. They face a Virginia team that survived, that was down 17-0 to ODU last weekend. I'm like, oh my God, what the hell's going on with the ACC outside of Clemson? Now, you know, we're trying to figure out a little bit about the Cavaliers. They got to go to South Bend. Who you got in this matchup?
I think what you just said on the way in is enormous to think about. And it's not always the best team in college football. Circumstances do matter. And if you're Notre Dame, you just came across the country and you just played the most physical game of the year that you're going to play. Nobody else is going to punch you in the mouth like that. How do you respond? It's going to tell me a lot about this team. Notre Dame is more talented. Notre Dame is, I know more, I trust more about Notre Dame. Now listen, if I'm looking at Virginia, Bryce Perkins is a man. He is super talented. But the thing about Bryce Perkins is he's going to be asked to do a lot. He's their leading rusher. Obviously, he's their leading thrower. He's got to get some help outside of him. That's the biggest loss I've seen for Virginia, losing two running backs from a year ago. They haven't found somebody they can depend on yet. I think they can make life tough on Ian Book. I don't think this is a high-scoring game. Do think Notre Dame will come out sluggish a little bit, but I think they'll find a way to win in the end.
Okay, I'm with you. We're going with Notre Dame.
Oh, dang it. Go Virginia.
You think I was
going
to pick Virginia?
Go Virginia.
In South Bend? Come on. Now, I'm not going to tell you I'm picking on this one because I think this could be a separation. USC at Washington, and the one thing I've noticed is that, you know, we're talking to 18 to 22-year-olds. USC, a different team at home.
Yep.
They play completely different. Fink's going to get the start. I don't know if he looked great. I mean, he made some throws. It helps that you got two outstanding wide receivers that sometimes you just chuck it up and throw a Hail Mary, and one of them is going to win the battle at the highest point. And at a certain point, I'm like, what is Utah's secondary doing in that game? So USC.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yes.
No, I'm not letting you off the hook, bro.
No.
Hold on.
Don't let me off the hook.
Fink looked okay. He went 21 of 30 for 351 with three touchdowns and an interception. And he was, by the way, let's not forget, he didn't even know he was going to play the football.
You're right.
So,
you're right.
But David, you can make
a case here that a couple of those big throws should have been picked off if the secondary was in the right spot, because there were some big throws. I mean, the Pittman made that play. He went for it. He took it. He goes, it's mine.
He's 6'4".
He's a grown man. I get it. But Fink was throwing some balls up there.
When I have
an adult
on the outside, I throw the ball to him. Like, this what are you? No, see, Fink also bought time. You saw he was a good athlete.
He
can buy time. He can scramble. He can break tackles. So, like, the disrespect for Fink right there.
Oh, there's no disrespect. I'm just putting some perspective.
Kevin Negande, but
No. I'm putting some perspective.
Disrespect.
When you look at those numbers.
Dude threw for 351 yards.
When you look at some of those numbers, it could be misleading if you're not watching some of the big play throws he was making. And a couple of them were, I'm just going to scramble for my life, keep this play alive, which is great. And then I'm going to chuck it up. And then a couple times you're like, what the heck is going on in the secondary? Utah, this is supposed to be the best defense for Kyle Whittingham. What's going on? And I got to tell you also, USC has a ton of young talent. Their defensive front, they were fantastic in the game. I thought they did a really, really good job late. So I say all of that.
So it's apparent Matt Fick stinks.
No.
You're picking Washington.
See what
like
you
that's
do.
That's apparent.
All right. So who you got in this game?
Let's see what you do. Yeah.
Who you got?
Washington.
Why?
I think that Washington, from a standpoint of line of scrimmage, you know, you look at Adams. He's back. I think to being healthy at left tackle, and he's been banged up the last couple of years. I think Jacob Eason's playing, you know, pretty well. And actually, by the way, Kuiper just came out with his mock draft and had him in the top 25. I think.
Yeah, he did.
With as a first round pick, so he's got the big strong arm. He can make a lot of throws. I trust Washington's system and their ability to un-Utah. And what I mean by that is to not give up big plays. Washington's always good at scheming defensively and making you earn it. And I just I think USC is in a tough spot, in a tough atmosphere, and I would not be surprised if this game was a 17-point win for Washington, a big win for Washington.
I'm with you, and I think Peterson will have that team ready. And another role here that plays a big factor with, I think, SC, they're on the road. And I think they're just a different team. In that environment, in the Coliseum, the way they play really inspired football at home for Clay Helton.
Thing stinks.
No. So, stop that. So by the way, the Eason conversation, it's fascinating that you mentioned. I know it's just week five of the college football season. It's, what, September 27th, and you know, Mel Kiper has his, you know, release with his big board and stuff. But I find it interesting that he has from 24 on his big board, and at 25 is Eason. And those two quarterbacks, I think, will always be connected, considering how we saw that quarterback battle at Georgia. All right, so we're on the same page as we continue here, because I got Washington as well. Ohio State at Nebraska, your first Lincoln experience, the environment, everything you've seen. You watched tape from last year. What do you think is going to translate from that tape to this team in this game in this situation on Saturday?
It'll be fun to watch Ohio State's defense. First of all, their defense and offense, really, because they're a totally different team than they were a year ago so far. I mean, Ohio State offense was a spread them out and throw it all over the yard and have multiple receivers and make explosive plays. And that's not who they are now. But defensively, you know, they were a team that was out of gap a lot, out of assignment a lot. Martinez has a great ability to do a lot of different things, and his ability to run downhill and break tackles a year ago was a big factor. His ability to spit the ball quickly on the perimeter, and they just give you so many different looks. He has to play phenomenal to keep them in the game. I mean, he has to run it really well. He has to make really good reads, really good throws. One thing I'll be interested to see too is, you know, Fields hasn't been challenged yet. I'd love to see a defense, you know, change the looks up and have the athletic ability or the physicality to maybe stop the run a little bit and make him make different decisions, because I want to see if he can do that and pull the trigger. But Ohio State, way better across the board. Chase Young is the best player, arguably, in college football. I mean, he's an absolute animal. But just like last year, Nebraska didn't block him probably 15-20% of the time. Why do I waste, Kevin, two blockers on a guy that's really great, when I can just stick the ball in the back stomach and read Chase Young, the big freak, and then let him run up the field and I give it, or let him stop instead of settle down and chop his feet and I'm going to pull it and I'm going to run it. So, you know, how they handle that Chase Young experience, they did a good job with it a year ago and they mixed it up, but Martinez will have to play his best game of his career to beat this Ohio State Buckeye front. It looks more disciplined. It's super athletic, super fast, super strong, super disciplined right now.
It's a primetime game as well on ABC. Do you think that environment plays a role at all for Justin Fields early on? Because, you know, one of the things we've seen from this offense, quick starts, explosive plays. Do you think any of that for this offense trips them up or, you know, gives them a slow start in the process of trying to figure out this Nebraska defense?
If the black shirts were really black shirts back in the day,
and
super physical and super good, I would give them a chance. But I mean, they just got lit up by Illinois.
Yeah, they did.
And I don't know if you've watched Illinois offense the last 10 years. It's kind of set football back a little bit. It's not really setting the world on fire by any stretch. So I don't think Nebraska's good enough on the defensive front, because Ohio State's done a good job physically up front and running the football. And you know, Fields is, again, this is more of a, if you haven't watched Ohio State, this is more a JT Barrett team than a Dwayne Haskins team. You know, this is Justin Fields and his running ability, a lot of zone read, a lot of his athleticism being used. So I don't see how they can stop them consistently like they couldn't a year ago. And I think it's going to be a problem. And I don't think Martinez can continue to play under duress and continue to run the football and continue to throw and make magic happen the whole entire game when you have superhuman freaks that are chasing after you the whole time.
Another thing about this game, though, that I don't think anybody's really talking about, we rave about Jonathan Taylor and Travis Etienne. I think Dobbins has been fantastic. Now, granted, look at who they've played, but I think Dobbins is, as the primary back now in Ryan Day's system, he just looks so good back there. What do you see on tape when you watch Ohio State and Dobbins and how they're running the football?
Well, not only that, too, with him being the main guy, but I think another thing that's important, too, is this is now a running attack all the time. And guess what? He doesn't have his co-host from a year ago, but you know what he does have? He has another running back in Justin Fields.
Yeah.
He has another guy that is on the field at the same time that can also that also scares you and makes you go, okay, I got to sit here and I got to be patient and I got to play. And they keep you so off balance, and they run all these different things to keep your eyes engaged on something else that now, you know, then you got to watch Justin Fields and wait a minute, defensive end, I got to play slow to fast here. I can't just fly up here and try to stop Dobbins. I got to worry about, you know, Justin Fields pulling the football and being able to run himself. So it's an offense that is going to get way more rushing attempts, and his rushing attempts are obviously way up through the roof. And, you know, he's physical. He's a tough, tough kid. You saw him with his make you miss ability a couple years ago, and he's a true freshman. Remember when he opened up at Indiana, and you're like, God, look at that freak.
Yep. I mean,
that dude's really, really good. I think he's a workhorse that they'll ride and they'll need to, because, you know, just like there's a lot of backs you've seen be a by committee thing. Well, it's pretty apparent now. I mean, you're going on three games with, you know, 17 plus carries for him. They're going to ride him. And, you know, last week obviously was pretty solid when you're rushing for almost 200 yards. That's a good day at the office.
All right. Now, so we've been, aligned up again. We're lined up again with all our picks. So I'm going to throw a wild card out here and see if we could separate each other.
Okay.
Washington State, Utah. Who you got in this game? I don't need a breakdown. Who you got in this game?
I got Utah.
I got Washington State.
We differ.
I think the Pirates going to win this game. 5.5 point spread. They're on the road, but Anthony Gordon, considering how they collapsed last week and what they did, I'm going to go with the Cougs and Leach, and we'll see how this plays out with our picks, because that'll be the one that separates us.
Another thing, Kevin, that would make you feel good if you're pulling for that upset is that Utah just gave up 4,467 yards to Matt Fink, who you said stinks, and now bringing in Anthony Gordon. Hey, 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 hey! You gotta like your odds, bro.
Gordon will throw for 10 touchdowns, and we'll see if that game ends at, you know, Pac-12 after dark, and we wake up in the morning, and they're still playing football there, and suddenly they put up 70 points. All right, Pollock, listen, before we let you go, I want to get your first thoughts, because this is your first Lincoln experience. When it comes to going on the road, when it comes to, you know, you've been in many, many towns, and you'll understand what the college experience is all about. What are you most looking forward to when you go to a new place?
Well, I think you always look forward to the fans. You always look forward to the passion. And I do say this, it is different when you come to the Midwest. It is just a different vibe, a different feel. It's kind of like, first of all, the people are always so nice and so genuine, but Nebraska fans are crazy. I mean, they are nuts, and they are passionate, and they love their daggum team, and they support it. And even when they've struggled and had some lean years, they've always supported it, and you've always heard from Big Red. So I think no different. I think it'll be a great scene. First time since 2007 that we've been here, so I think they'll show up and show out, and it'll be just like last week with Georgia, first time there since 13. Before that, Texas, it was Austin. We hadn't been there in 10 years. And just, it's fun to go to traditional powers and with amazing fan bases that haven't had game day for a while, because you know they're going to bring it.
Enjoy it, man. Enjoy Saturday night. Let's hope your voice comes back. We appreciate you joining us here on the podcast.
Appreciate it, my man.
We'll be back in a minute with Gene Wojciechowski, but first a word from LinkedIn. Building a winning team is all about finding the right people for the job. That's why college scouts all over the country spend so much time recruiting players they need on the field. And when it comes to hiring for your business, there's no better tool than LinkedIn. Now, personally, I love to use LinkedIn to connect with old colleagues. Over 600 million members visit LinkedIn to make connections, learn, and grow as professionals and discover new job opportunities. That's how they make sure your job post gets in front of people with the right hard skills and soft skills to meet your role requirements. Things like collaboration, work ethic, adaptability. LinkedIn does the legwork to match you to the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. To get $50 off your first job post, go to linkedin.com/campus. Again, that's linkedin.com/campus to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Now back to the show. He is the co-author of the number one football book on Amazon right now, No Excuses, The Making of a Head Coach, The Memoirs of Bob Stoops. Great to have Gene Wojciechowski join us here. Unfortunately, we're on a podcast, so I'm sure we can't see an outstanding pocket square that Gino is probably wearing right now. Gino, first off, thanks for joining us and happy anniversary. On your 25th anniversary, you decided to hang out with us here on this podcast. We feel special.
How pathetic is that? You know, just I was emailing a few people today and I realized Ivan Maisel was on the email chain, and Ivan was actually at my wedding in Chicago 25 years ago. And, you know, you can always tell sort of by the quality of the gifts the people give you on your wedding day, what they think your chances are of making it. And, you know, Ivan gave us paper plates. So I don't think he thought it was going to last 25 years. And so I'm going to have to remind him of that.
Well, I also heard from possibly somebody named Ivan that you got married on a Sunday in Chicago, and I heard you missed a pretty big game at the Big House.
I know. I always love it because they always churn up the Michigan Colorado Cordell Stewart finish.
Oh.
And I always just like, I tell my wife, I can't believe you made me miss that game. I actually played golf with Cordell Stewart a few years back, and I was telling him that story. And I really think he thought I was nuts to have gotten married instead of covering that game. So that's true love, Kevin.
True love. And I'm sure that it means a lot to your wife when you bring it up often, right? Especially on a day like this. Let's talk about the book and the title, No Excuses. What's behind that title?
Well, when Bob got the job at Oklahoma, and you kind of have to understand his DNA, you know, he grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, which, you know, as you know, is a very working class, at the time, incredibly dominant steel town in this country. And it was, you know, very blue collar. And, you know, the saying there was, you know, from the time you're born, everybody said no excuses. You know, we're working class. We're working people. We're a bunch of mutts, you know, a lot of immigrants in the city of Youngstown. And, you know, we don't make excuses. And that was also something that Bob's dad, who was a renowned football coach in that area, at Cardinal Mooney High School, mm-hmm. you know, that was sort of what he passed along to all of his boys. And so when Bob got to Oklahoma, Oklahoma's football program was in shambles, and he didn't want to hear about what was wrong and why it wasn't working and who hadn't done this and what the facilities were. And he just wasn't interested in any of that. So one of his first acts there was to have his new strength and conditioning coach put up in the weight room these huge signs that said no excuses. And it became his mantra during his time there at Oklahoma. And I remember talking to him, Kevin, just a few days after he had gotten the job. I was working for ESPN, the magazine, and he was in a car, in a rental car someplace, trying to recruit somebody somewhere. And, you know, it was the middle of the night, and he called me. And he just started talking about no excuses. So when we tried to talk about what might make a good title, that was the first thing he said. Let's call it No Excuses. So, you know, it just sort of harkens back to his beginnings as a coach at Oklahoma.
In the book, he's very candid. He doesn't shy away from controversy. He talked about topics like Joe Mixon and Rhett Bomar and personal decisions on why he was choosing Oklahoma over other options and potentially that Florida job as well, way in the past. What surprised you during the process of putting this book together?
All the things that you just mentioned, that he was so honest and forthright and not afraid to say how he felt about his feelings, about you know, personal decisions that really conflicted him, his personal life, his professional life. You know, Bob, I've known Bob a long time, and in covering him, he was always, you know, very pleasant, personable, helpful. But I think anybody who's covered him on a daily basis or even on a national basis, you know, Bob isn't someone who would let the deflector shields down very often. In this book, when we first started, I think I sort of semi-insulted him at the very beginning. I said, look, Bob, if we're going to do this, you have to write an honest book. You know, you owe it to the people who are plunking down their hard cash. You've got to give them, you know, your soul and your heart and your honesty. And he did it in a polite way, but he basically said, look, you know me. That's all I know, is to be honest. I didn't bare my soul when I was a coach because that wasn't my job. But if I'm going to do this book, I'm going to bare my soul. And so that, in a weird way, surprised me that he was willing to talk about things that he'd never been willing to talk about before, professionally, personally. I found it so refreshing and cool. And I felt like as I was doing the book with him, I was learning about a new Bob Stoops, a Stoops I'd never known before.
Do you think he's going to coach again?
I'll put it to you this way, Kevin. When he walked away a couple years ago, he was convinced he was never going to. And I was there the day that they had this, sort of gala for Bob Stoops, what, 1,500 people, whatever it was, in Oklahoma City. They unveiled the statue, and he talked very much like a guy who was totally at peace with his decision. It wasn't easy. It was going to be hard to deal with not being involved with football. But I think over these past couple of years, like all coaches in most cases, once a coach, always a coach. So now he's sort of dipped his ankles and knees into coaching with the XFL. Do I think he'll ever coach college football again? I'm not going to say no. I think if the right opportunity came up, I think it would give him pause. I think he would consider it. I'm just speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for Bob, but I think he's too good of a college coach and still young enough that I could see him, if it was the perfect situation, I think he'd seriously consider it.
Do you think he has any pause or regret when he looks at the Oklahoma situation and what Lincoln Riley has done the last couple of years?
No, on that, absolutely not. I think one of the reasons he did feel so good about walking away when he did was that the program was in a perfect situation. Nobody could say, like they did when he took the job at Oklahoma, hey, you didn't leave me with any players. Recruiting's a mess. We got no staff or facilities stink. There's no infrastructure. There's no stability. He left Lincoln Riley with everything that he did not have when he took the job at OU. You know, one of the things that I admire so much about Bob is he has a real integrity about him. And he knew if he stayed, he could have ridden Baker Mayfield to, great success, college football playoff, Heisman Trophy. He had Kyler Murray in the pipeline. He knew if he had stayed, he would have been unbelievably successful. He had Lincoln Riley as his offensive coordinator. Now, there's no guarantee that Lincoln wouldn't have gone and taken a head coaching job someplace, but Bob has had a great history of hiring really good coordinators, so offensive coordinators. So I think he knew what he was giving up, and I think had it been anybody but Lincoln, he might have stayed. And he says that in the book. But because it was Lincoln, I think he felt a real at peace with himself, being able to say, okay, I can walk away now and feel good about what I left them with, and feel good about now how I can sort of piece together my life again.
No Excuses, that's the title of the book, The Making of a Head Coach, co-authored by Gene Wojciechowski. Do you have a favorite story from this book?
It's kind of a sad story in a way, but it sort of speaks to the relationship that he had with his father. His brother Mike was on his staff for a long time, was a really good player at Iowa with Bob. Mike Stoops, obviously the head coach at Kentucky, was at Iowa as a player. You know, Mike ended up being a head coach at Arizona. His older brother, coach at Youngstown State. It is a family of football. And his dad was a renowned defensive coordinator, Cardinal Mooney in Youngstown. And his dad and his oldest son were coaching in a rivalry game, and Bob was at the time at Kent State as an assistant, and Ron Sr. suffered a heart attack on the sidelines and died during the game. Mm-hmm. And it was, a tragedy of unspeakable horrors. But when it came time for the for the funeral. You know, Bob was a great player in his own right at Iowa. And, you know, they won the Big Ten there and at a place where they hadn't had a lot of success and been to a Rose Bowl. And before they closed the casket on Ron Sr.'s casket at the funeral, Bob took his Big Ten Rose Bowl ring off and put it in his dad's casket. Mm. And his mom said, you know, Bobby, what are you doing? You know, that's yours. You should keep that. And Bob just felt so strongly about it that, no, I want Dad to have this. And so to me, it just spoke about sort of this unbroken chain of love and devotion and father, son, and football. And it really is who Bob is. That's who he is as a person. That's who he is as a coach and as a father and as a husband. And so it's a sad story in a way, but to me, it illustrates who Bob Stoops is.
Powerful story. Looking forward to this, of course, for anybody. It sounds like a great pickup for the holidays down the road. It's the number one football book on Amazon right now. No Excuses, The Making of a Head Coach, The Memoirs of Bob Stoops. Gene Wojciechowski, the co-author here. During our conversation, you brought up the concept of coaching and where Oklahoma was when he inherited the program and how he had to turn things around. One of the things that he had at Oklahoma and Norman was patience. And let's talk a little bit about the current game and what we're seeing right now with ADs and fan bases and coaches coming in who are a year or two into turning things around or trying to turn things around. I'm talking about Chip Kelly at UCLA, Willie Taggart at FSU, Jeremy Pruitt, which you know so well at Tennessee here. What do you make of where we are as college football fans, as we talk about these fan bases and these coaches getting the opportunity and the patience to do what they want, to establish their own type of style with their own type of players?
Kevin, do you remember when, like at Notre Dame, if you were hired as a head coach, you knew you were going to get 5 years.
Yep.
5 years, regardless. 5 years to figure it out. And then there came to me a tectonic plate shift, a seismic shift, when they fired Tyrone Willingham before the 5 years were up. And to me, that was the beginning of this movement of lack of patience. You know, one of the reasons Bob was successful at Oklahoma is he had the same president and the same athletic director during his entire 18-plus years there. That just doesn't happen anymore. I think we've gotten to the point now, and we see it at all the schools that you just mentioned, that fans are driving things that they really shouldn't drive. They're driving decisions that they shouldn't really have an impact on. And athletic directors are feeling the pressure either from donors, boosters, fans, and they don't have the courage or the strength or the backing and support from their own president or administration or money people to stand by a guy. And I think we've seen what happens when you constantly turn over coaching staffs. It doesn't get any better very often. I mean, it's very rare that you make a change and you see immediate results when you keep on churning. So, yeah, is it a mess at Tennessee? Absolutely. Is it a mess at Florida State? Of course it is. And several other schools. It's even a mess at Michigan, where they've given Jim Harbaugh some time.
Great point.
But you have to not draw a line in the sand. You have to draw a line in the cement and say, look, you know, I hired this guy for a reason. I'm going to support him for a reason. And unless there's just something that convinces you it's not going to get better, I think you've got to give a guy a chance. You got to give him a chance to recruit. You got to give him a chance to find his voice and who he is as a coach, to hire the right assistants, and to do that in a year and a year and a half. I mean, they're talking about getting rid of Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee after how many games has he coached? He hasn't coached, 16, 17 games?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's insanity to me. And it just doesn't end well. I don't know how we got to this point, but I know at some point someone's going to have to make a stand, for better or worse. It might backfire, but someone's going to have to make a stand and say, look, this is my guy, and you know, I'm going to stick with him.
It's really hard to measure success in the first 2 years, I think, of any college coach on the field.
Yeah,
if you go by wins and losses, the only way you could really measure success, I think, is, okay, where are we in recruiting? Are we getting an uptick in recruiting from where we were? And also, are they playing hard? To me, I always look at in year two, am I seeing this team playing harder than I did in year one? And is there any room for optimism? And I think you could make a case like what happened for Chip Kelly the other night may have extended some time for him because there's a case where, okay, we feel like we're turning the page. And then you look at what's going on with Jim Harbaugh in year five and you're like, are we better than where we were and what we had and what were our options? So how many years do you think a coach should get? Is it that 3 to 4 year window there, that soft spot in between 2 and 5, or do you think it's a legit 5 years?
Well, I think the days of 5 years are over.
Mm-hmm.
No one can sustain that. If there's not, and you put it perfectly, if there's not tangible evidence of improvement, and that can be in the infrastructure, it can be in the attitude, it can be in the recruiting, it can be in the coaching staff you've put together. It can be in your own development as a head coach. It can be in the attendance increase. It can be all those things. You don't have to win a national championship to get all those things. In Harbaugh's case, it seems as if they've regressed.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm the athletic director there, that is troubling to me. And when you have players, former players in your own program questioning how things are going, that is a huge red flag. When you begin to lose the support of your core group of former players, that's a problem. In Tennessee's case, attendance, that's going to start to drop off. They are going to more than likely lose their next three games. They have an incredibly hard schedule. They're going to be, 1-6, mm-hmm. I think it is?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how Phil Fulmer handles that situation as an athletic director. You brought up a great point, Kevin, and it's a simple one, but it's a telling one. Is your team playing harder for you than it was before? And one thing I noticed, like Louisville is not a very good team.
Yes.
I think we can all agree. They're going to struggle this year. But when you saw them play against what Notre Dame in the home opener,
yep,
they played different.
Mm-hmm.
They played hard. That you could tell they don't have the athletes, but they played hard. So Scott Satterfield, he's making a difference. So to me, if I'm an athletic director, I'm not looking at how many years I'm going to give him. To your point, I'm going to look, is he making a difference? And if I believe he is, then I'm going to support him as much as I can.
And segueing to that, too, is a perfect example of a guy who's the combination of Harbaugh and is this team playing hard, and that's Scott Frost at Nebraska, mm-hmm. where a guy returns and then there's this hope. It's the fan base that falls in love with our guy. We can identify with our guy because he knows about mm-hmm. the glory years and he knows what's going on. And you saw that at the end of the season last year where they were playing hard and they turned things around. And now they get the chance to be a part of the game day experience under Scott Frost here as the head coach. You guys go over there. What's that experience? What do you most look forward to seeing on Saturday with Nebraska game day, Ohio State in town?
Well, Nebraska, I mean, Ohio State is playing as well as anybody. We may have slept on Ohio State a little bit,
yep,
when we're talking about a team that could win it all this
mm-hmm.
year. We'll see how it evolves. It's a long season, but the early returns in Ohio State are pretty impressive. Nebraska, and it's become a cliche, but Scott Frost is building a culture there, and that takes time. And you're doing it at a place, Kevin, as you well know, that sort of lives in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these programs live in the past. Michigan, Tennessee, go down the line. Everybody wants what was there in the past. That's hard to duplicate. But I know Scott Frost a little bit. I think we all saw what he did at UCF. And if you spend time around him, you know, he's a worker bee. And he's a grinder. And so I don't have any doubt that he'll be able to get this going the right way. But it's like trying to turn, a battleship around in a bathtub. It takes a little time, and you got to back up and move forward and turn, and it goes slowly. So do I expect Nebraska to beat Ohio State Saturday? No, but I expect to see a Nebraska team that plays its butt off, and I expect the atmosphere there to be electric. And I don't know if that has anything to do with College Game Day there. I hope it does a little bit.
Yeah,
we can't wait to see what it's like at Saturday morning. And I think they'll be juiced and ready to go. And I think that will carry on to the game. It's going to be a lot of fun to see that environment.
One of the best fan bases, and they travel everywhere. That
Absolutely.
Sea of red. Cannot wait to see it. That game's on ABC Saturday night, and have fun College Game Day. Enjoy the entire Lincoln experience. Gino, thanks for joining us.
All right, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Appreciate Pollock and Gene for joining us. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and LinkedIn. Hey, be sure to check out Marty Smith's America this week. He chats with Oconee Brewing brewmaster Taylor Lamb, and he wants to have a beer made for him. But of course, I hope he saves some for us. Remember, subscribe to Marty Smith's America and the College Football Podcast with Herb Street and Pollock wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to our producer, Gabe Bassane, and reminding you, our loyal listeners, you can submit questions that Herbie will answer on the next podcast, which would be Monday. Just leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air. Enjoy week 5. Appreciate it.